from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about the return of the Indiana Living Green magazine.
Wait, was it recycled?
No.
I'll chat with a theater organist who's coming to town.
And I'll get a preview of a one-man show about RFK. Plus, we'll also have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Indiana Living Green magazine is back in print and online to help Hoosiers live a sustainable lifestyle. Published by Nouveau Inc., Indiana Living Green's aim is to tell stories about sustainability and conscious consumption in an entertaining way. Travis DiNicola spoke with writer and editor Jim Poyser, whose Living Green column is titled Doom and Bloom.
Indiana Living Green, which never really went away, but maybe was dormant a bit. Is that a fair green analogy?
About summer 2010, Lynn Jenkins, the publisher of Indiana Living Green, began to shop around for someone to take it over after 4.5 years of this wonderful magazine talking about green lifestyle kind of subjects. She had just sort of tired of it. I know that, you know, you and I and many people we know, we start these projects out of passion and you know, after a while,
they can be overwhelming.
Yes, indeed. So she started shopping around, and she is a wonderful person. If you have never met her, Travis, you'll delight in her when you do. She had the great sense to approach Kevin McKinney, publisher of Nouveau, about this idea. Nouveau, really, I think, was the first paper to print on 100% post-consumer paper.
Okay,
we've done enough stuff around our building to be part of the Green Chamber of Commerce. So, you know, we write about environmental stuff, and we write about bicycles, and we write about micro-brewed beer.
Live it pretty well.
We live it as best that we can. So she approached Kevin, and you know, Kevin, really, to make a long story short, said, yeah, let's do this. So we acquired the magazine.
Okay.
There actually was a dormancy in the sense that we didn't put out one of the bi-monthly issues, September, October, probably, while we were getting ready to put our own stamp on it and move forward and really just integrate Indiana Living Green into the rest of our Nouveau job descriptions. We have hired actually one person for the Endeavor salesperson, Bob Barnes.
Okay.
But otherwise, we're all just sort of slipping it into our existing job description.
And it is monthly?
It is monthly as of this week. It's going to come out Monday on the 27th. It should hit the stands, Kroger, Marsh, and then some stands in, throughout Indianapolis. We're in Bloomington as well. And Kokomo and West Lafayette. But starting with this issue, we've redesigned it. We're launching a newly designed website. And we're going monthly.
Very cool. Congratulations.
Thank you so
much. It's
got to
be exciting.
Well, yes, it's especially wonderful for me because I have been nigh on obsessed with everything eco, especially the past few years. So it's really this wonderful gift that's been handed to me to try and advance the conversation when it comes to everything relating to the environment.
You have brought along a quiz.
I have indeed.
And I'm intrigued by your quiz.
Would you like to take it?
I kind of would, because the quiz is going to be a part of, you know, is this going to be like a regular feature in
yes.
In the magazine?
In fact, there is a panic quiz question on IndianaLivingGreen.com every single day. So you can nick away at these one question at a time if you'd like.
So how would we like to do this? Would you like to?
Well, I tell you what, why don't you read the question? I'll read the five possible answers, and then you get to answer what you think is the correct one.
Okay, well, the first question is, according to researchers, what is driving fish crazy?
Is it A, sexy womanta rays, B, disoriented sharks, C, dissolved CO2, D, methane chimneys, or E, fishermen.
Now, I'm assuming this is not driving fish crazy in a positive way, so I'm not going to go with those sexy womanta rays. I hope it's not fishermen, because I do fish but catch and release. So I don't know what a methane chimney is, but it sounds like something that comes out of the water. You know, since it's Indiana Living Green, I'm going to take a stab at it and go with dissolved CO2.
Ding, 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 ding.
Really? I got it right?
Yes, you are correct. Carbon is emitted into the air via various fossil fuel orifices, and it descends into the ocean, makes it acidified, and drives fish crazy. It also bleaches coral and affects the shells of mollusks.
Really?
Yes.
That can't be good.
So you think catching and releasing is okay? Because I got to think that the fish are going to be traumatized by that experience.
They're not really happy about it, I can tell you that.
Well, I mean, you know, how would you feel right now? You're just like going about your daily business, and there's suddenly that giant something or other. Okay.
You know, I will say that in all honesty, yeah, they're probably not enjoying that experience. But from an evolutionary standpoint, you know, what I notice are that the fish that I often catch and release are pretty small. The big ones, they have figured it out.
They're wily.
So I'm just saying, I actually think that I'm doing them a service by, like, teaching them how to avoid those fishermen who don't catch and release.
Well justified. Well rationalized.
Yes. Thank you. Let's do one more quiz question,
yes,
and then we'll get back to the magazine, talking a little bit more about that. But I'm curious about this one. What does famous pro snowboarder Jeremy Jones think about climate change?
A, it's a hoax. B, it's dope and dialed in. C, it's real and moving fast. D, it complicates the chicken salad air.
Hmm.
And E, it increases the melancholy.
Is chicken salad air something that snowboarders try to catch?
These are all snowboarding terms I had to look up on the internet.
I'm pretty impressed. I don't know if it was Jeremy Jones, but I did hear recently a pro snowboarder talking about this year in particular, how hard it's been to train because there just hasn't been enough snow at the usual slopes that they would train at this time of year, and that because it has been somewhat warmer this year. I don't know. I'm thinking that he thinks it's doped and dialed in. I might take a stab at number two.
You intentionally missed that one to hear what sound I was going to make.
I kind of wanted to. Does he believe that it's real and moving fast?
He does indeed, as do most people paying attention.
And who are out there actually looking at it and seeing,
yes,
and reading and such. So, yeah.
So the panda quiz is really an example of what we're trying to do with this. I mean, Travis, it doesn't work to scare people.
Nope.
There are psychological studies.
Even though it is called panda quiz.
It is called the panda quiz. It doesn't work to create a demarcation between people who believe and people who don't believe. It's not a partisan issue. It really is what we're trying to do is trying to create interest in what's happening. If you don't believe in climate change, you still want to be an eco-conscious person, to my mind. You still want to recycle what you do use less. You want to carpool. You want to use mass transit.
Why? Just from a economic funding? I mean, let's say you don't believe in climate change. I mean, why are those things important?
There are so many things, so many changes a person can make in their life that actually impacts their bottom line. Yes, it absolutely reduces the cost in many instances. Now, how long is it going to take you to pay off your geothermal that you put into your house? Well, a bunch of years. How long is it going to take you to pay off the solar panels you put on your roof? Not as much as it used to, but it's still going to take a few years. But there are things we can do every day. And I tell you what's fun for me is now that I, for example, ride my bike every day, I've made so many friends who bicycle. Bicycling now is such a fun thing to do in this town. There's all the bicycle lanes that have sprung up magically.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to double in the next year or two. You know, and the same thing with the being conscious about where your food comes from,
mm-hmm,
or who's brewing your beer or whatever. It really is, to me, kind of a more of a community and social issue as much as it is its impact on the environment. And also what I like, and this is what people reinforce when they tell me their stories about how they've changed their behaviors. There's sort of this momentum that comes out of it. As soon as you start to do something, then you see the benefits. And as soon as you see the benefits, then it becomes maybe you start in a friendly, competitive way, starting to, you know, go up against your buddy. Hey, I rode my bike, you know, today, even though it was icy out or whatever. I mean,
sure.
I think that we could actually inspire each other into being better stewards of the earth.
What are some other features that you anticipate in the magazine coming on a monthly basis?
Sure. First of all, I'm really so grateful that I'm going to have a column every issue. I call it Doom and Bloom.
Yes.
Because that's what I am. I mean, on one hand, I am the darkest person you will ever meet about the coming eco-collapse. On the other hand, I see all the positive community-oriented things that are going to come out of a growing awareness.
Sure.
I've been waiting for 2012 and the so-called apocalypse for quite some time. So I'm so happy to have a column. A lot of the writers that people familiar with the publication are also going to find in the quote, new Indiana Living Green, Renee Sweeney, Betsy Sheldon.
Sure.
They're great writers. They're going to continue to tell great stories. One of the things I'm really excited about is each month we're going to shine a spotlight on a college activist.
Okay.
So the issue that comes out next week, Megan Anderson, IU student. She works for Coal Free IU. I'm now connected to college activists all mm-hmm. over the state. These are young people that are pouring their passion for the earth into some very positive activities. We've got a lot more advocates with their columns, either in print or on the website as well. Indiana Wildlife Federation, Carrie Hamilton at the Recycling Coalition. We have progenitors and proprietors and practitioners who will be sharing their how to be better stewards of the earth. It's just going to be a lot of voices.
And I got to ask you, will there ever be any features specifically on the arts?
On the arts? Well,
I mean, you mentioned Carrie Hamilton and Indiana Recycling Coalition. The artist that they featured at their annual event this year was Justin Vining, who I know has done a lot of stuff with them, helping them raise money. Really cool artist was actually on Art of the Matter a few weeks ago. He uses recycled found wood that he gets to use as his canvas for his paintings that he makes.
Absolutely. One of the really exciting things for me about Indiana Living Green is we're going to be able to get to a lot of innovators, and including artists,
and telling
on a more
their
statewide basis. I mean, yeah. Think of all the amazing artists we also have in mm-hmm. Nashville area,
sure,
who are working with recycled materials and that sort of thing. So,
absolutely.
You know, it's certainly for me at Nouveau in the past half a year, I've been very happy with our story about Catherine Ball living on Indy Island. That was a mm-hmm. story that combined
the
art
IMA.
And micro-remediation of the lake there. And then the great cover story by Dan Grossman on Flounder Lee.
Yeah.
Heron
oh,
Prof and photographer and artist
walking
going
around
up
Alaska.
To Alaska, yeah. taking photos and creating art around issues of climate change. So.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how artists are incorporating that sense of their environment, of the materials that they use, even the sense of the phrase conscious consumption. How do you consume things, and how does that become part of the work that an artist uses? Because certainly, if anyone's aware of their environment and aware of the materials they're using, it's artists.
That's right, and you can imagine too. We'll have no lack of stories to tell when it comes to our local restaurant community. Mm-hmm. And again, I know I keep mentioning beer, but the people that are making beer in this town and throughout Indiana are very conscious of their impact.
And also, I mean, just lots of great local restaurants that are part of the slow food movement and using local ingredients and seasonal ingredients, whether it's, our Bistro or Black Market or Libertine or what have you, but lots of interesting work being done by chefs around town as well.
That's right.
Very good. Jim, this is great. Very exciting that Indiana Living Green is growing as we speak. Oh, I couldn't help myself. Hey, we got time for one more quiz
before we
wrap this up. From what is it Yosuni National Park, also known as the lungs of the world? What is it under threat?
It is under threat from A, oil drilling, B, Ebola, C, coal mining, D, cigarettes, or E, Yeti.
I'm pretty convinced it's the Yeti.
But wait. I forgot what sound I make when you mess up, Travis.
So the lungs of the world, this national park, is it under threat from coal mining?
You know, I had to look at the answer myself because it's either coal or oil.
Unless people are smoking a lot of cigarettes in the park.
Exactly, and throwing their butts everywhere. Mm-hmm. It is, in fact, oil drilling.
Oil drilling.
Yes.
So now, where is that park?
Boy, you got me.
Well, that's why it's under
threat.
That's
why, exactly.
We'll find out next month in the next issue of Indiana Living Green. Bum, bum, bum. Jim, thanks a lot for coming in Art of the Matter today.
Travis, good to see you.
Travis DiNicola with writer and editor Jim Poyser. The new Indiana Living Green magazine can be found at Marsh and Kroger stores, as well as online at indianalivinggreen.com. Again, indianalivinggreen.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
One of the world's finest theater organists, Simon Gledhill, will perform on the Grand Barden Theater Organ, formerly from the Indiana Theater in Indianapolis. He'll present a varied program of orchestral works, musical theater, British light music, and jazz on Sunday, March 11th at 2:30 at the Warren Performing Arts Center. Sharon spoke with him by phone about the accidents that led to his career and how a theater organ differs from a classical organ.
So you did not start on theater organ. You started with a piano accordion. What led you to that?
Yes, it's rather an odd choice, isn't it? But what actually happened was that we were doing a show-and-tell thing at school when I was a small child, aged, about six, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my friends at school had Lithuanian parents, and she brought in a toy accordion. And I don't remember, but my parents told me that I went home that day and said, I want an accordion, and I want to learn how to play it. And that's how it began.
That's fantastic. And they accommodated you with a present?
Well, finding a good accordion teacher is actually not that easy these days. But as it happened, the husband of a person that my mother worked with was an accordion teacher, and a very good one, too. It was an amazing coincidence, really, but very lucky for me.
It was fate.
Indeed.
You know, there was a time, although you're of a generation too young to remember this, but there was a time when every third kid in grade school was studying accordion. I think in the States it had something to do with the Lawrence Welk show and Myron Florin and just the vast number of households that watched a particular television show and therefore were exposed to this rather exotic instrument.
Sure. And of course, in the United Kingdom, where I come from, there's a big tradition of Scottish and folk dance music being played on the accordion, although that isn't the kind of music I learned to play. I was a classical accordionist.
Hmm. Do you still play?
Just occasionally. I have an instrument hidden away somewhere in my parents' house, and once in a while I'll drag it out and have a go. But I have to say, it's much easier playing the theatre organ.
Really? What?
Yes, I think. Well,
that
I think
cannot
so.
Possibly be.
I think so. Many people don't. But one thing that I notice when I do play the accordion is it hurts. You know, all that pulling the bellows in and out puts a huge strain on your left shoulder. And after I've done it for about half an hour these days, I have a pain which takes weeks to get rid of.
Oh, best not to do it then.
Yeah, of course, if you do it on a regular basis, you don't have that problem.
Right, right. So, your parents got you into the organ field by getting you a small electronic organ when you were about 10, right?
Well, that's kind of correct. The truth is, my father bought the organ for himself.
Ah.
And he intended to learn to play it himself. And the problem was that son and heir took one look at it and decided that he liked that too. And before very long, he'd hijacked it. And my father was teaching himself to play Silent Night that Christmas to the family. And, of course, in the meanwhile, I started playing it all the time. And I well remember that a couple of days before Christmas, he unaccountably developed a tremendously sore finger, which meant that he could not possibly play Silent Night for us. And to the best of my knowledge, he never touched the keyboard again.
Parents are so generous to us, and we don't realize it at the time.
That's absolutely true. My parents have been fantastic throughout this whole time, supporting me, taking me to lessons, taking me to competitions, music competitions, entering me for music exams, and just being there in the most wonderful and supportive way. And I certainly wouldn't have achieved half of what I've done without them.
So you're on the path now. You're playing classical organ and piano, but something happens and you fall in love with theater organ. What is that something?
Well, I met a fellow called David Shepherd, who's subsequently become a very good friend of mine, at a music show. And David himself is a very competent theater organist. And he heard me play the organ at this music show and said, you know what? I think you should try the theater organ. And he told me about an instrument that was installed in a private venue close to where I lived with my parents, the owner of which would let you hire out the instrument by the hour to play it. You used to pay £3 per hour. And he said, go and see this guy, arrange a session to play the organ, I think you'll like it. And of course he was absolutely right. I had one try and immediately fell in love, and the rest, as they say, is history.
For people who may be much more familiar with classical organ and don't really know the difference between the two styles and the two kinds of instrument, and I realize this is a much more complicated answer than we have time for, but can you give kind of in layman's terms the chief differences, first of all, between the two kinds of instruments?
Well, let's briefly start with the similarities. They're both pipe organs, and indeed, some theatre organs were built by companies who also built classical pipe organs for churches and concert halls. The difference is mainly, I think, in the voicing, which was intended in the case of theatre organs to be very orchestral. And in addition to the pipes in the organ, which simulate the sounds of different orchestral instruments, there are real percussion instruments which are fired from the keyboards of the organ. And of course, they add to the orchestral effect, which is designed to give the organist the capability of reproducing the sound of an orchestra or a dance band, and very effectively too. You can't really do that on a church organ, which was designed to do something very different.
Hmm. And then in terms of playing, it strikes me that you need somewhat different technical knowledge for a theater organ than you do for a church organ.
Very much so, because there's no music really written for the theatre organ, just one or two things. But for the most part, what you're playing is music that was written for another purpose, orchestral music, film scores, music from the Broadway stage, and so forth, the classic American songbook, all that great stuff. So the organist is not only performing the music, but also arranging it for the instrument. And many times the arrangements are being created on the fly, as it were. You sort of work out the basic shape of the arrangement ahead of time, but the detail of how you play the piece changes every single time. There's a huge amount of spontaneity and personal creativity in the performance. And to me, that's one of the things that's really wonderful about hearing a theatre organ performance. It's a bit like hearing a jazz performance, where, once again, the player is doing something which is very personal and individual.
Is that because there are differences between and among organs? So if you're on tour and you're playing an instrument one place, it might have different capabilities from another place. Is that part of the reason for the improvisation?
Definitely. The instruments come in all shapes and sizes. Some of them are in better condition than others. I have to say, by the way, the one I'm playing in Indianapolis is absolutely first class, a really, really good one. And the voicing of the instrument is different from case to case, as it were. And therefore, you have to cut your coat according to the cloth and make sure that you play to the instrument's strengths and play music which will suit it really well.
And so when you're planning a tour and you're exposed to an instrument you've not played before, you're having that venue send you the technical specs. So you have a little sense, or are you just going in and doing a sound check and a little bit of rehearsal when you arrive?
Well, the technical specs undoubtedly help, but even then, what you see on the page, it can be very different to what you actually experience when you put your fingers on the keys and hear the sound that comes out. So you really can't beat getting there ahead of time, experimenting and working out what suits the organ and what doesn't, and then planning the program accordingly. So I would say about 80% of my program will be fixed in advance, and the remaining 20% will be things that I change shortly before the performance, just to make sure that everything is optimized for that particular venue.
That sounds, I love that element of risk and living on edge.
Absolutely. Just once in a while, you play a concert somewhere where they want to print the program that you're going to play, all of it in advance, in detail. And then, of course, you're obliged to play all the things that you've promised you're going to play. And sometimes you can have the most awful shock when you get there and find that one of the pieces really doesn't work at all well, but you have to do it anyway. I won't have that problem in Indianapolis because they're kindly giving me a free rein. And as it happens, I've played the instrument, I think, a couple of times in concert, as well as made some recordings on it. So I know very much what I'm letting myself in for. And I must say, I'm looking forward to it very much.
Can you give us a sneak preview of a couple of pieces that will be on your program when you're here?
One of the things I want to do is to play some music from the Broadway stage, and I think I'll be including some music from one of the less well-known Lerner and Lowe musicals. You know, they're the My Fair Lady people.
Right.
But I'm going to do music from Brigadoon.
I love
which
Brigadoon.
Which is one of the less well-known ones. Yes,
yeah.
Lovely songs. Heather on the Hill
mm-hmm.
and one or two other really, really lovely ones. I'm also going to feature some of the music written by Burton Lane. He's the guy who wrote the songs for Finian's Rainbow, and he also wrote On a Clear Day You Can See Forever. I'm going to play, I think I'll probably start by playing On the Sunny Side of the Street, which is a tune I've been starting quite a few of my concerts with recently. And in between, there'll be some big band stuff, maybe some film music, some lush ballads, and probably a transcription or two of a light classical orchestral piece. So it's going to be a real mixed bag, and the idea is to show every facet of the instrument off as well as possible.
Absolutely. What a treat. Now, do you have a theater organ in your home? Are you living someplace where you can have an instrument at home?
Well, there are people who have theater pipe organs installed in their home. You might think that sounds absolutely nuts, and I guess it does require a kind of madness to go that far. But the nice news is that you can buy very effective digital copies of theater organs now, in which the instrument is producing sounds via digital recordings of real pipe sounds. And it looks like a theater organ, it sounds like a theater organ, but the sound is coming out of speakers, and therefore it takes up a great deal less space and is rather more portable than a real pipe organ would be. And I have one of those instruments. It was built by the Allen Organ Company of Macungie, Pennsylvania in the USA, and it's a really great instrument to practice on.
Are there any instruments you've not played anywhere in the world that are kind of on your list of things I must do, places I must play?
Oh, sure. And quite close to the top of my list are instruments which are still installed in their original homes. There are many fine transplanted instruments that have been put into new homes. But for me, there is something particularly special about playing one of these instruments that's still in the original 1920s movie palace for which it was first built. And I guess a couple that spring to mind immediately are the huge Fox Theater in St. Louis, which has a wonderful large Wurlitzer organ, and the Paramount Theaters in Denver, Colorado, and Seattle, Washington, both of which have Wurlitzer organs as well. And it's so great to go there and realize that the instrument has been doing that same job in that same building for all those years.
And is now in the hands of a new generation.
Quite right. And, you know, they're tremendously versatile instruments that can be put to a whole variety of uses, which of course is the reason why they were put in the buildings in the first place. They can turn their attention to new types of music, new ways of expression, and be remarkably effective. So I think it's an instrument for today, not just an instrument of yesterday.
If you do this, you must let us know. I just had this inspiration that we're going to hear you playing hip-hop on a theater pipe organ sometime.
Well, hip-hop may be pushing it a little bit, but there is music of today which works well. The key is that it needs to be music with a good melody and harmony. So the kind of stuff that Michael Bublé, for example, is featuring now, not just the old stuff, but some of the newly written songs that he does, that kind of music works really well. The music which has mainly rhythm and not so much melody and harmony doesn't suit the theater organ so well, but that still gives you loads of scope.
Sharon Gamble with Simon Gledhill. You can hear his concert of orchestral works, musical theater, British light music, and jazz on Sunday, March 11th at 2:30 at the Warren Performing Arts Center, where he'll play the Grand Barden Theater organ, formerly installed in the Indiana Theater. Tickets are $12 presale or $15 at the door. Students are free at the door. Get more information at cicatos.org. Again, cicatos.org.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I understand that our calendar of arts events today might have just a tiny bit of a hip-hop influence.
You think so?
I think so. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, it's time to let you know that it's time for
What Do We Do? And we're not going to wine this week, though I will tell you that Winefest is coming up pretty soon. That's right, Sharon.
WFYI Ice Miller Indie Wine Fest.
Very good. Yeah, it is next Friday, March 2nd from 6 to 9 at the Indiana Roof Ballroom. It's a great annual event.
Tickets are still available.
Tickets are still available. We're both going to be there.
We're both going to be there, so come by and say hi and tell us what wines you've tried that you like.
Exactly. It's always a great night. There's also a great raffle, but it's really fun just to try all the different wines and talk to sometimes they're winemakers, sometimes they're just people who know a lot about wine. Guess what, Sharon? I just found out.
What'd you find out?
I'm going to be the MC.
Cool.
But I won't wine.
You better not.
I promise I won't.
All right.
But I'll still look for you. We can like go drink some wine together.
All right. That sounds good. And you can, if you don't have your tickets yet, you can get more information at WFYI.org.
That's right. So join us there for Wine Fest. But there's also lots of tons of other things going on between now and then and after then as well. We'll continue to talk about on that calendar. Well, I was, you mentioned a hip hop calendar.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So you've got an event at the Harrison Center you want to talk about, I believe.
I do. And you have a little tune about it. Mm-hmm. It's the next First Friday event, and it's called Put a Bird on It.
If you like it, then you should have put a bird on it. Is that what it is? That's what this is all about,
that
right?
That is exactly it.
Yeah.
That is exactly it.
That's not really quite it. It's a reference, actually, to the TV show Portlandia, right?
Yes, and all of the art will be bird theme related. So expect some Twitter inspired art.
Oh, wow.
You know,
there you go.
I'm just saying. And that's coming up on March 2nd, this coming Friday night at the Harrison Center, which is always a hopping place. Get it?
Hopping. Nice. Clever. Yeah, lots of great local artists. There are also always lots of great studios to check out as well. Some very neat stuff. Hey, something coming up at the IMA that's pretty cool. On Thursday, March 8th, it's a free performance and reception, as well as a onstage conversation all around the IMA's recent acquisition of Allura and Calidzilla Bodies in Flight Delta. This is the piece that was in the Venice Biennale last year in the U.S. Pavilion that was so exciting. It was part of the Body in Flight series that the IMA sent over to Italy as part of this great exhibition, and it has been brought over here, and so you get to see some of the video sequences as well as hear about the work, and speakers include the gymnast David Durante and choreographer Rebecca Davis, composer Jonathan Bailey, and then IMA staff will be there as well. Well, if you want to learn more about the cool work that they did last year at the Biennale, then definitely check this out Thursday, March 8th, starting at 5:30 at the IMA.
Very good. Hey, if you're hearing us on Friday night, here's something to check out during the day on Saturday at the Idlejorg. If you had a chance to see the beautiful and very inspiring show about pistols last year, you'll be intrigued by the Antique Arms Collectors show, which is going to be at the Idlejorg this Saturday. So go check that out. You can find out more at idlejorg.org.
Very good. Hey, a play that you should definitely go check out, Word on the Street, is it is a fantastic production at the Phoenix Theater, and that is August, Osage County by Tracy Letts. It was the winner of the 2008 Tony and Pulitzer, and it's sort of a dark comedy, if you will, version of a family getting together and dealing with sort of all their secrets and things that are coming out in the story as they get together, kind of like A Long Day's Journey into Night if it was a little bit funnier, which it isn't. But that's what makes it so interesting. And this continues on at the Phoenix Theater through March 11th, and I keep hearing great things about it. I can't wait to go see it myself.
Poor Eugene O'Neill. The Impalas are coming as part of the Anything Goes concert series at the Indiana History Center. They have a concert coming up on March 15th. Beware the Ides of March. No, you don't have to. You don't have to worry about the Impalas. They perform 60s, 70s, and Motown style music. It's a cool package deal from 7 to 10 o'clock on March 15th. including dinner and a dessert buffet and a cash bar. You do need to make prepaid reservations, and you can do that at 317-232-1882, so 232-1882, or indianahistory.org. But very danceable, cheerful music by the Impalas, March 15th at the Indiana History Center.
Hey, Book Mamas out in Irvington is continuing to have lots of cool events, book clubs, book signings, concerts, things like that, including, in fact, if you're listening to us Friday night, then you can still check out tomorrow afternoon on Saturday, February 25th at 1:30, Joe Hightouse, who will be signing and reading from his new book of poetry titled Poison Sonnets. What a great name. Also, they have copies of the book Irvington in 1910 by William Gould available for sale all at Book Mamas. If you haven't been there, it's a nifty little bookstore on Johnson Avenue right off of East Washington Street in Irvington.
It's where all the cool kids gather, I'm just saying.
There you go.
Hey, here's something to plan ahead for. The 27th annual Brick Street Market will be held on Saturday, May 19th from 10 to 5 in Zionsville. And Zionsville is looking for artists and artisans to submit their applications for this obviously long-tenured arts and crafts tradition. They are looking for antiques, food, art, green or organic products, photography, plants, flowers, and handmade and or handcrafted textiles. They're not looking for mass-produced materials, and you can get more information about that by calling 317-873-3836. Again, the Brick Street Market, May 19th, looking by March 16th for people to apply to have their work in that event.
Very good. Hey, at the ISO, they are performing Aaron Copland's Suite for Appalachian Spring, as well as music by Felix Mendelssohn in the Lilly Classical Series, coming up on March 1st through the 3rd, and they'll be featuring violinist Clara Yumi Kang, the 2010 International Violin Competition Gold Medalist, and she's going to be performing Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto, but it's really cool. It's a great time, of course, as we're getting closer to spring, to hear the Suite from Appalachian Spring. It should be just a fantastic concert.
Speaking of music, turn back, oh man. It's your last chance this weekend to see the Actors Theater of Indiana production of Godspell, based on the Gospel according to St. Matthew. It's a sparkling score. You probably know some of the tunes even if you've never seen the musical, and you have just a few opportunities, a couple opportunities left to see this performance, which takes place at the Studio Theater at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. You can find out more at the website for Actors Theater of Indiana.
And Legally Blonde continues out at Beef and Boards Dinner Theater. Check out beefandboards.com for more information on that.
Very good. Speaking of last call, it's your last call for some sparkling music and one of the best dance medleys ever. Richard Strauss's Der Rosenkavalier in performance, well, almost last call, this weekend and next weekend as part of the IU Opera season.
Parents with kids out there who are into theater and dance, just giving you a heads up, now is the time that people are starting to have auditions for summer programs, including the IRT's 2012 Summer Conservatory for Youth in Acting and Production. Auditions are coming up on March 6th and 7th for students ages 8 to 18. You do need to schedule an audition and get all the information at irtlive.com. Also, if you're a ballet student and you're interested in auditioning for the Indianapolis School Ballet's Summer Intensive, those auditions are coming up on March 25th, and you do need to also schedule an audition and get more information at indieballet.org to pre-register for that.
If you haven't had a chance yet to go to Garfield Park, here's a reminder that not one but two gorgeous glass exhibits are going on in Garfield Park. The Indiana Glass Alliance has helped put these together. There is an exhibit both in the Garfield Park Conservatory and then another exhibit that includes a lot of programming, including some family-friendly programming. Find out more about that. Just type Garfield Park and Art Glass into your search engine.
And the last thing that I have for today is at Clues Hall on Sunday, this Sunday at 12:30. It's the Scholastic Art and Writing Awards Ceremony. It is free, no ticket is required, and it is a great way to celebrate the award-winning students from Central and Southern Indiana for all the work that they have done in visual art and writing. Of course, their parents and teachers and peers will be there. It's part of this 88-year-old tradition from Scholastic Art and Writing, but something very, very cool to check out if you're looking for something to do on Sunday, Scholastic Art and Writing Awards Ceremony, 12:30 at Clues at Butler.
Can you do the bird song again?
If you like it, then you should have put a bird on it. Is that right?
I don't know why that makes me so happy. It just does.
Anything for you, Sharon.
If you see either of us at Put a Bird on It at the Harrison Center next Friday night, come up and sing to us.
Sounds good.
And we'll have more things to see, do, and sing next week on our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Using Robert F. Kennedy's own words, actor Kevin Carraher has created RFK Remembered, a one-man, two-act multimedia show about RFK's political life, on March 2nd at the Indiana History Center, and Travis DiNicola spoke with Kevin to find out more.
What is it that intrigued you, that led you to want to create a one-man multimedia show about RFK?
Well, basically, it started because I used to be an editor at one of the local affiliates here.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was going through stock footage tape that we had there, and we just happened to have the speech that Robert Kennedy gave at what's now known as the Martin Luther King Jr. Park.
Right, the very famous speech.
Yeah, very mm-hmm. well-known speech. I think it's known as one of the 10 best speeches that a politician gave off the cuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, that park, like I said, is known as Martin Luther King Park these days. It's 17th and Broadway here in Indianapolis. And I was going through the stock footage, and I just happened to stumble across part of that speech that he gave.
Yeah.
And I was just fascinated by it, to be honest with you. It was very inspirational to me because it was from the heart, and it just talked to me a lot. And I'm like, my God, what do we have here? And I'm an actor on the side. I've been acting for years. That was actually my college degree was in theater.
Mm-hmm.
And another one of my loves was video production.
Okay.
So I'm like, how can I combine these two skills?
Yeah.
And because I thought, well, I can't really take this monologue and make it stand on its own. I have to wrap something around it. So I got the idea to form this show based on RFK's political life.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do is I take these different periods of his political life and I wrap it around these video segues that I produced with the help of a friend of mine. And what they do is they segue into each different period of his political life that I'm speaking
sure.
of.
Okay, yeah. So you're actually using, because I know that the script that you've put together uses his words from speeches and such, but you're also using video of him as well as still images and recorded sound as well?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. What made this project possible was there's a holding house for these old UPEI and AP images, and it's called the Corbis Bettman Archives.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And they have a program where they donate images, if you're in need of them, to nonprofit groups. And so that's what I did. I went on their website, and I found all mm-hmm. the images of RFK that I wanted to use and made a request for them. And I should mention that my sponsor is Irish Fest.
Yeah, I was very curious. I am a big fan of Irish Fest and Terry Sweeney and that gang, and have been a part of it in the past. I was curious how Irish Fest came to be involved with RFK Remembered. Of course, the Kennedys mm-hmm. are Irish, but how did that connection get made? made?
Well, actually, I had to have a sponsor, like I say, in all this. And we had a very good working relationship with Terry Sweeney as well, too, because my wife and I volunteer for it every year, and we were on the board for a while, so we know Terry very well, and Alice Davis, too, that used to be on the Irish Beth board as well. So I had to have a nonprofit organization sponsor me, or I would not be eligible
for the Corbis Images. Got it.
Exactly. Because basically, if I wanted to pay for these images out of my own pocket, it would have been about $45,000.
Sure. Yeah. So, well, that's excellent. And then did you go to, in terms of the show itself, did you then go to the History Center and say, I have a show, or did they know you were working on it, or how did that work out to be able to debut it there?
Well, actually, I first debuted the show back in 2004 at the History Center.
So this is not the first time then.
Right, so it played there in October 2004 for a weekend, and a good friend of mine that's on the staff there, he recommended that I might try and bring this back when the History Center started up one of their exhibits, the Experience Indiana exhibit, 1968,
right.
Robert Kennedy. That started, I believe, in February of last year, and is closing in April 15th. So for all our listeners, you might want to keep that in mind if you haven't seen that exhibit. April 15th, it closes at the History Center. So get down there. And so basically what happened was my friend that works there in sales, he suggested, why don't you bring this back in conjunction with this exhibit closing down? And so he passed it by some of the people at the History Center, and they said, let's go for it.
Has the show evolved some over the years with this new production?
Yes, it has. I say it's a work in progress because I'm really never happy with some of the segues, or we just recently recut one of the segues because I didn't like how it was a couple of years ago. I did it at Marion College as well a couple of years ago, and I just wasn't happy with it. So things like that I change. I've been changing up other things that I did the last time, too. Like I say, it's a work in progress. I'm never really satisfied with
it. So tell me, Kevin, what have you learned about RFK during the course of putting together and performing this show?
I learned more about what he was like a man. I mean, a lot of people just saw him as a political figure, but when you get into what really made up his character, it's really fascinating. Because he was different from his brother, John, immensely. You know, they had a lot of different characteristics.
Such as?
Well, I think the major, most different characteristic that they had was, and I remember this very well from the Schlesinger book, the Arthur Schlesinger book, Robert Kennedy and His Times. That, to me, and a lot of people agree, is the definitive book on Robert Kennedy. But I remember the best line in that, when they were talking about their differences in character, was that they claimed that John was a realist who imagined himself as a romanticist, and Robert was just the other way around. Robert was a romanticist who thought he was a realist. You know, so that's the major difference between them, other than Robert, I think, had a lot more compassion than his brother John, and that showed in a lot in what he did. Yeah.
What's something that perhaps you were surprised about to discover?
With Robert?
Yes.
I think what high moral standards he had. I don't know if many people realize that, but he's a Catholic as well, too, and he just was incorruptible. You could not get under his skin. And to me, those are true, really good traits, and I think that's why I always held him high as a role model for myself. Yeah. That's hard to find in politicians these days. You know, incorruptible and high standards, high moral standards. So I wish he was still here. He would have made a great president, I think. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the greatest presidents ever. And
so what do you think about when you take on the role? Are you trying to portray him as an actor? Are you trying to embody him when you're on stage?
Well, as best I could, I tried to do the Boston accent, and that's real nasal. You have mm-hmm. to get everything up here, you know, up in the nasal passage to be able to speak like Robert very well. But I did watch a lot of tapes and some CDs. There are a lot of CDs out mm-hmm. there on his speeches as well, too. So I listened to them incessantly. I would drive around with it in my car and, mm-hmm. and listen to it while I was driving. And that's basically how it got. It wasn't just a matter of how he spoke. It was timing as well. Some speeches, he talks very quickly. Other speeches where he's more reflective, he talks at a slower pace. So it's just getting that rhythm down.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
I think audiences would enjoy coming down to see this show because I think it's not only educational, I think it's inspirational as well, especially to those young people that did not get a chance to experience that time in history.
Travis DiNicola with actor Kevin Carraher, who has created the show RFK Remembered, on March 2nd in the Franklin Katrina Basile Theater at the Indiana History Center. Showtimes are 2 and 7:30 p.m. The $8 group rate for the 2 p.m. matinee includes free admission to the Indiana Experience exhibits prior to the show and free parking. For tickets, call 317-232-1882. Again, 317-232-1882. RFK Remembered is presented by Indy's Irish Fest. More information is at indianahistory.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4, when I'll chat with author Larry Swayze about his new mystery.
I'll get a preview of the upcoming New Century String Quartet concert.
And I'll chat with the actor playing Tevye in the touring production of Fiddler on the Roof. Plus, there will be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.